I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, we have a special episode of Smashing the Plateau. We'll do a deep dive into a company that has an incredible record of smashing the plateau, producing a double-digit margin increase in 18 months while being sealed a best workplace, which means that over 70% of their employees now report that they're doing work that is meaningful to them and drives maximum value, and they're recognized for it. Listen as my friend Spencer Deering, president of Best Work Inc., interviews Lawrence Baird, the vice president of operations for Mosaic Learning. At the end of this episode, we'll share a special gift to help you create a working environment with a level of employee engagement like that achieved by Mr. Baird at Mosaic Learning.
David, thanks so much for providing a chance to interview business operators who've smashed the plateau with their organizations. I appreciate it, and I hope listeners do too. I'm eager to hear what they think. Today, I'm speaking with Lawrence Baird, Vice President of Operations at Mosaic Learning. At Mosaic and other organizations, Lawrence has overseen hundreds of new product launches and improved internal processes for numerous higher education institutions. Over the years, he's developed and taught courses in organizational behavior, operations management, marketing, communication, and negotiations at Stevenson University in Maryland, Walden University, Colorado Technical University, and the University of Phoenix. And while all of this is wonderful, I asked Lawrence to speak with us for two specific reasons. In his first year and a half as head of ops for Mosaic Learning, he's increased margins by double digits. And we're very excited to announce, we have just sealed Mosaic Learning a best workplace, which means over 70% of employees now report that they are doing work that's meaningful to them while maximizing value for Mosaic. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Spencer. Appreciate it.
First of all, congratulations on being sealed a best workplace.
Thanks. It's really exciting. We're happy we had the response we had from our team. We're looking forward to moving forward with all those great things that came out of that survey you guys provided.
Well, it was amazing to see that you've got 70% of the folks in that office believing that they're doing work that's important to them, but also maximizing. So kudos to you there. And before we learn about how you achieved that, as well as the impressive margin increase, can you give us a brief description of what Mosaic Learning does?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the broad sense of the definition, Mosaic Learning is a next generation e-learning company. So we develop everything e-learning, everything from your basic page turners, if you think of PowerPoint on steroids, that's doing basic training in ethics or culture at different organizations, all the way up to interactive training, gamification, virtual reality training, augmented reality. We also have a software development team that does custom learning management solutions as well as custom software applications. And then we also have a web application division that does the web apps and mobile apps.
So organizations that have existing curricula that they provide to their clients or to their employees, you help them modernize that through an e-learning vehicle, whichever one makes most sense. Is that right?
Absolutely. So a lot of our clients come to us because their content is either outdated or it's boring, or their audience isn't receiving it and absorbing it properly, not learning from what they're providing from their learners. So what we do is we take generic or basic or sometimes a little bit more advanced content that a user could have difficulty absorbing, and we take that and we make it cool, and we make it we present it in a way that the learner is going to absorb it a little better. So, for example, we'll take a basic topic that might be boring to your typical 17-year-old reading through a textbook isn't going to work for them. We'll take the content from that textbook and we'll make a game out of it. So we'll make it so that we're actually, for the lack of a better term, tricking the learner into having a good time while they're learning the content. So that's essentially part of what we do here.
Oh, terrific. And it sounds like you're really converting a lot of what's stale and kind of old school into what's more frankly, meaningful for clients and the people who work with and for them. And that is a great segue to a question I have about this incredible corporate success you've had over the last year and a half, but concurrently, this amazing reflection you've gotten from the people who work there. So do you think that employees doing their best work and your increase in margin is a case of correlation or causation?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it's both. A healthy organization causes the work to be meaningful. So when we're healthy, people tend to have a more positive attitude and approach their work from a different perspective, which directly correlates to a healthy employee. So it's almost like a circle where a healthy organization breeds people who are happy with the work that they're doing. And when we're giving them a way to work on things that they are happy with, then they become more happy. So it's almost a viral kind of thing.
And clearly in the results that you garnered through your survey, it was beyond even happiness, a more kind of fundamental fulfillment in the work they're doing. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they enjoyed getting the survey. You know, it was a simple thing that they could do, and it provided them an anonymous way to provide feedback. But the fact that we were providing that survey in the first place, they were happy with. But then the feedback we got from the survey was really great. It allowed us, A, to identify how many people actually thought that they were doing meaningful work before. But it also allowed us to pinpoint, through kind of the open-ended question at the end of the survey, allowed us to pinpoint those specific things that we really need to work on to get us to the next level. The way I approach this is improvement of an organization isn't a destination. It's a trip or a journey. So having that feedback helps us kind of know what we need to do to make us get to the next level. Even though we've had success over the last year and a half, there's still a lot of work we can do just to fine-tune specific things. And the feedback we got from that really pinpoints exactly the things I need to focus on as a leader and that I need to work with my team on to improve around here.
Oh, terrific. Let's go back actually to a year and a half when you arrived at Mosaic. You have a very thoughtful and progressive, and frankly, you and I speak the same language around this, which is it isn't ever over. You don't just pat yourself on the back and say, hey, we've arrived, because as soon as you do that, you know, you're going to start fading, right? So when you arrived at Mosaic a year and a half ago, how did you know the organization had plateaued?
So in the interview process, even before I decided to come here, in the interview process, it was essentially told to me. That was the situation, the current state of the company. And plateau might not be the best term. You know, there was still growth in the company. The company was healthy. They were profitable and doing okay, but they were on the verge of huge growth. And to be able to take on that growth, the operation had to be stable from the core. So we have a core set of people here, and that core had to be stabilized in order to get to the next level. So that was my first task. And actually, to be honest, why I was hired here is to come in as a change agent to be able to get it from okay to moving forward in the right direction to become a
company. And if that first step of kind of operations that you took is about stabilizing the core, what does that mean?
So it's really evaluating. So the first thing I did when I came in is I evaluated everything in the company, and that, you know, starting with the people. Obviously, systems had to be evaluated, how we worked in project management, what systems supported our work. That was kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But really, the people was stabilization, making sure we had the right people in the right seats, making sure that people were just taking up seats to be a body in a position. And so the approach I take here is you've got A players, you've got B players, and you've got C players. And from my perspective is we shouldn't have anybody that's not an A player on the bus, at least in the core part of that team. So having two B players or even three B players isn't even worth one A player. So somebody who's really got their heart in it, hard workers, really hungry to get to the next level, aren't just coming here for a paycheck. They're really invested in what our company's doing. They're really happy with the work that they're doing. And to be a partner with the organization rather than just an employee of the organization. So really getting the right people in, getting those A players in, and you know, shuffling around the chess pieces to make it work.
And we found with a lot of clients two things. One is that sometimes a B player in one spot is an A player somewhere else. So I'm wondering if that's happened to you. And two, do you find, or had, did you find in Mosaic that, that kind of commitment became contagious? So once you got the A players in the right spots and they were really invested, did other folks who kind of were half in, half out get more invested around them, or did that shuffle of people have to emanate out as well?
Well, yeah, that's a great point. So it's the old saying, you know, one bad apple, you know, can affect the whole bunch. That tends to be the case in organizations too, where, you know, that mentality or that morale bleeds out into the rest of the team. And if there's a couple in there that aren't pulling their weight or disgruntled, that type of thing, I try to work on fixing it. But if it's unfixable in some cases, then there needs to be a different change. So the process of that is, you know, finding another position that the person might fit in a little bit better. But in some cases, there's just not a fit, and that's the reality of it and the honesty of it. If there's not a position, then there need to be discussions about whether that person fits in the trajectory of our organization in the future.
And we talk to a lot of operators about exactly this, which is, it reminds me, I was a teacher a long time ago, right? And if you're in a classroom, all you need is one or two tough kids in that classroom to really bend the entire experience of everybody in there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of operators kind of, if you go in there and say, hey, who are the bad apples here? They'll say her and him. And it's like, they know it. And yet they can't get rid of them or help them or just engage with them. And I'm wondering if you could share with some of our listeners how you actually did that in an effective way and how you did it efficiently so that it suited both you at Mosaic and also this individual who probably just is in the wrong spot.
Sure. Yeah. So the first step is talking to everyone, not just my direct reports, not just the CEO who was here before I was and is the head of the company and has his perspective on things, but really getting everybody's perspective on everything and getting into what really drives each individual. You know, what does each individual want in their work life, in their real life? You know, how can I help them get to the next level? And through that kind of evaluation of each individual, I'm able to kind of pull pieces away to find out what makes everybody tick. And by understanding how each person operates, you can kind of understand where their motivation is, if they are an A player or a B player. Are they here just for the paycheck and kind of going through the motions? Or are they somebody who's here to be on the team and be part of the team and be part of a winning team, not just a team that kind of ties every game?
Hmm. So you get the core straight, you get the right people in the right seats on the bus. What other operational steps did you take to help you achieve the successful results that other operators could emulate?
So identifying weak points, I think that's a pretty obvious one, but identifying weak points and not being scared to fix them. In the past, when I was younger in leadership roles, I would kind of dance around certain issues and hope that they would get better moving forward. But dancing around certain things that are not able to be fixed just causes the problem to get worse. Mm. So really identifying the issues and then taking action on them rather than hoping that something is going to fix itself or somebody's going to get a better attitude about something or someone's going to increase their work ethic. Those things, you know, I've learned pretty much don't fix themselves over time, and taking action has to be done. And by not taking action, you're just kind of letting the problem just keep going on.
And is there a specific example you could share that's not too private that you would be able to share that illustrates that?
Sure. I'm going to really generalize this is, you know, the leaders of a company need to be on the same page as the rest of the leaders. So people in every leadership position, anybody who's managing somebody else needs to be on the same page as the rest of the leadership of the company. If they're not, and they have this attitude of an us versus them kind of mentality, like these things are being done to us by our organization, and that mentality is contagious. And so if you've got a leader with that type of attitude, that's a real red flag, because that trickles down to their employees, and then their employees, you know, start to carry that weight as well of us versus them. Why do these things keep happening to us rather than, you know, us as an organization handling the challenges that come to us together?
And when you made that change so that the us versus them attitude of the leader, that leader was not necessarily you know, shown the door, but moved around probably to a better spot. Did you find the team all of a sudden relinquished that attitude of us versus them as well, or did they hold on to it?
They relinquished it. And it takes time. It doesn't happen like overnight, but it takes time for people to kind of shed that skin that had been built there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really interesting how, you know, somebody who was perceived to be a B player who wasn't in a management role, just a contributor, someone who kind of just came in and did their job every day and left, you know, the time that the whistle blew and didn't put in the extra effort. It's amazing how their attitude changes and they kind of morph from a B to an A because they've got the right leadership and the right attitude above them, kind of giving them the right direction and the right, you know, positive feedback on, you know, we're all a team here and we're all here to help each other rather than this, all these things are happening to us.
God, that means, I mean, it does underscore the power that one person has in an organization, right? Mm-hmm. So that poison of a bad attitude and negativity can reach so wide and deep. It's just, it's extraordinary. And it's funny because I was talking to a friend of mine who covers a professional basketball team. And I was saying, you know, how many people on this team need to be a cancer in the locker room to basically blow the whole thing up? And he said, one. And I go, that's right, one. And guess what? In most organizations, there are at least 2 out of 10 people trying to blow up your organization from the inside out. So it is just vital that operators take control and take charge, just like you did, so that all these other people who do want to perform at a high level are liberated to do it.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So are there other steps, other concrete steps that you've taken that other operators could follow that have really pushed those margins so high in such a short period of time in the same business? It's not like you guys started different businesses or anything else. You've really just enthusiastically optimized what you're doing at Mosaic Learning. Is that right? I don't want to be too presumptuous.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we don't do anything. You know, some of the VR stuff is new. Some of the AR stuff is somewhat new. But other than that, most of our stuff has been the same. A lot of our projects are the same. We have stepped up our game as far as, you know, the level of graphic design and creativity that we have in-house, where it was kind of going through the motions before. Now we think of, okay, how can we make this the best thing possibly be, and how do we get this learner on the other end, you know, keeping the learner in mind, how do we get them to absorb this content in a way, or to learn this content in a way that's going to be meaningful to them, that they're going to enjoy doing it, and that it's going to change things for them moving forward, whether that's a high school student or somebody who's been in their career for 40 years, how do you make an impact with that? So it's all been the same for the most part. So I think that's really looking at the ground up and not accepting kind of the status quo of that's how it's always been done before. We're always going to do it that way.
So, if we can banish if we can banish those words from every organization in America, we would be so much better off. I should charge everybody I hear that from $20. If somebody says, well, we've always done it like that, $20,
yeah,
put in the kitty,
exactly.
We'll throw a party at the end of the year. But you cannot say stuff like that anymore because you'll be stuck. But going back to an operational step, you mentioned an interesting one that you maybe just did intuitively, but it sounds like you drove an understanding of the end user back into everything people at Mosaic Learning were doing. Is that right? Where
yeah,
it wasn't
absolutely.
There before? Okay. So that's also
it,
something.
It was there before. It might not have been as strong. Really, yeah, that's the first question we ask our clients when they come in or we're talking to them on the phone is, what do you want? What do you want the outcome to be? What do you want your learner or your customer or your whoever's experiencing what we're creating? What do you want them to experience? How do you want them to experience? And what's the final goal? What do you want them to be able to do at the end? And so that helps us kind of get our head around, okay, this is our audience that we're creating this virtual reality for, this e-learning for. How would I, if I were that type of person, if I were a 17-year-old not knowing, you know, am I going to college? Am I not going to college? What am I doing with myself? How would I feel? And how would I want to learn something? But that's really kind of, we turned it around that way rather than saying, this is how people need to learn, and saying, how do they want to learn?
Right. And do you kind of constantly survey those end users so you understand their changing needs and desires?
We do. It depends on our clients. Some clients of ours just, you know, we just create it and it's kind of out the door and they're responsible for surveying them. But a lot of times we'll go and check in and survey through the different analytical things, through running management systems and things like that. We can get analytics. So it is, we do feed on that feedback. We also, one thing we do, particularly for the younger audience, we'll bring in interns and we'll say, hey, pretend you are, you know, because they are that audience. You know, we have interns here that are in college who just, you know, just graduated from high school, and we'll put them in front of what we're creating and say, tell me what you think about this. Is this something you would actually be interested in doing? And is this the way you would want to learn this subject matter? Is it different than, you know, just reading a textbook or having a, you know, faculty member, you know, give you a lecture on it? Is this impactful to you? So we do take that feedback seriously.
I hope you're enjoying our show today and Spencer Deering's discussion with Lawrence Baird, the Vice President of Operations for Mosaic Learning. At the end of this episode, we'll share a special gift to help you create a working environment with a level of employee engagement like Lawrence has achieved at Mosaic Learning. Now, back to the show.
This idea about, you know, operational excellence, right, is not just about what you've done and where you are, but it's where you're heading. And do you have other plateaus, so to speak, that you are concerned about, that you're thinking about already? Okay, here's how we're going to need to smash through that when we arrive there in the next 18 to 24 months?
Yeah, there's actually a couple. So growth is obviously a challenge in itself. Having the right people in the right seats is one thing, but then growing from there and keeping to put the right people in the right seats over and over again, because we get that core team I referred to before. We get that in place, but then your contributors, you know, those that are knocking that out of the park, need to be moved up, you know, to manager level as we get more and more people on board. So cultivating those talents and being able to have people spread their wings a little bit more and get out of their comfort zone to be better leaders, getting more people in the door. The second part is, you know, just the industry that we're in is very fast. So things move at the speed of light. We consider ourselves right now, being in October of 2017, we consider ourselves ahead of the game. We look at the things that we create and we truly believe that they're better than a lot of things that are out there in the market in the same space. But we have to continue to be ahead of the game so that everybody else doesn't catch up. So that's the other challenge.
Mm. And how, in terms of size of firm, do you want to add 50% more headcount by the end of 2 to 3 years? Or do you want to double in size, triple in size? Do you have an idea of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're looking, so last year we doubled in size and we look to double in size again this year. And we have to do that in a smart way.
And you said you want to double in size again in 17 or in 18?
In 18. So we've doubled in 17 and we'd like to try it again on 18. But again, it has to be thoughtful and it has to be the right people, just not putting bodies in chairs and managing our intake of work that we have. We don't want to overload ourselves where we're servicing our customer and producing something that's not the best it can be. So that's kind of the next wave here. We also want to move into many more verticals than we're in right now, moving into more healthcare initiatives and higher education and more Fortune 500 companies type of thing that we don't necessarily touch right now.
Wow. That's a fantastic plan. And actually, the good thing is now, as being certified a best workplace, that'll make you quite a great target for high quality recruits, I would imagine. Because every, you know, especially these younger professionals, they're really so anxious to work in a place where that work is meaningful, but it also has to drive results. And specifically, when we look at that, back at that survey that you conducted, are there any specifically revealing results in there that you can take action on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of it is the balance between attention to the customer and attention to the employees. So some organizations can tend to teeter one way or the other. So very customer focused can take away from, you know, how important your employees are. And if you're valuing the employees a lot higher than the customer or the client, then you're unbalanced that way and your clients aren't going to be. So there's a specific balance that needs to happen there where both are focused. So when somebody asks me, hey, are you a customer-focused organization, or are you an employee-focused organization? I say both.
I got you. But these survey results helped you think about how to rebalance that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Because a lot of our, not a lot, but a few of the comments in there, and I'll be here, some of the comments in there that was that some of our employees felt that the clients were, were getting more attention than they did. And that's a natural thing. And that's a fine, that's an okay comment to make. And I'll take that, take that to heart because it's true. And not to say that our clients aren't, less important, but there needs to be that balance of both where everybody's important in this mix here. And we really want to become partners with our clients rather than the client and us kind of thing. It's not enough. And back to the internal struggle that we have of the us and them, there's also shouldn't be an us and them with the client all the time. The client, we want to be a partner with our clients where we're actually part of that. And some of our best clients, I think, feel that way is that we're kind of one team rather than this ping pong match back and forth.
And also, to your credit, again, a lot of operators, leaders, managers, bosses talk about wanting to get feedback, but then when they get it, they don't do anything with it. So kudos to you to actually be able to embrace it and make meaningful changes that will affect not just the employee experience, but also the bottom line.
Well, thanks. Well, it's a group effort. I couldn't do it without, the people that are here and the people that are passionate about the work they do here and every single person in the organization, making the organization look good, but then also our leadership, giving the freedom to be able to make the tough decisions. In a lot of cases in organizations I've been in the past, decisions were made either very slowly or not at all. And that's probably the worst case scenario is if it takes you 6 months to hire somebody in a position that was needed 2 weeks ago, that's not helping anybody.
Right.
The leadership of the company, we hire people within days when we need somebody. So having that speed and agility, I think, is really important, the ability to make those types of decisions.
And then it's not a coincidence that when you push that goal setting and decision making out, then all of a sudden work becomes much more meaningful for those people that you hire. So it is a pretty virtuous cycle. Well, let me transition a little bit to you personally, if you don't mind. What has been some of the most transformational help in your leadership journey?
That's a good question. So, first of all, trial and error, being through a number of different positions. I was at the same company for a very long time and being able to be in a number of different positions, overseeing groups of people in different countries, an international workforce was helpful because you see a different perspective that way, and being able to learn from my own mistakes and saying, okay, well, rather than dancing around these problems, I gotta hit them head on early in my career. But then external influences, I have friends at Under Armour who were at Under Armour from day one, and having that kind of courage to be able to believe in something at its very beginning and being able to put heart and soul into something that you that may or may not work kind of thing is something that I've looked at as kind of an inspiration and following that is to be able to say the people at Under Armour didn't know Under Armour was going to be Under Armour that it is right now back when they started there, and to think of it that way, to say, okay, let me have a vision of what this can become kind of thing has been a pretty big influence on what
Okay, and this is really interesting because this is one of the things we talk a lot about, which is there's so much noise out there about what to do, right? So you just articulated very clearly the what is you have to build a vision that people can buy into, and you have to invite them into it in a way that's emotive and they embrace it, right? So what I want to know is how did you do that at Mosaic? Because you come into this small group, you doubled one year, you're going to double the next, you're on the Under Armour path. How do you actually create that vision that's so compelling that people buy into it? And how do you communicate that in a compelling enough way that people buy into it?
Well, that's a good question. So people are constantly asking themselves, why am I here? Why am I doing what am I doing? Why do I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and drive an hour to an office and work for somebody who may or may not care about me and the product that, my client hates the product that I'm producing or whatever I'm doing gets scrutinized all the time. Why am I doing that? And if I can answer the question of why people are here, why I'm here, why our president's here, why our CEO is here, and why every single individual is here, I think that gives them reason to understand and to and to convey that in their everyday life. So if I can convey that, you know, you're here, you know, for the betterment of the rest of your life, you know, your life shouldn't be your work in most cases, you know, it's really the betterment of the rest of everything that you do. So the better you do at, you know, at your job, and if Mosaic can support you in those ways, then the rest of your life becomes better. And I try to convey that to the employees here of, you know, if you're having a really bad day, just think about what it's all for, kind of thing. So I think that's kind of the core of the approach here.
And is there a rationale that you've driven into the culture of Mosaic Learning so that people think, hey, the work we're doing here is really vital, not just because today I got to check a box for a client, but because there is a bigger why for what we're doing, rather than just, I need to, you know, the more successful I am at work, the better my life is?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's easy. The answer to this is easy, being in a learning scenario, particularly with some of the learning that we create, which is, you know, safety-based learning or learning for apprentices who are going into the different trades. We're actually creating things that are changing people's lives or saving people's lives. So if we create this really amazing virtual reality training that's eventually going to help somebody not fall somewhere or have an on-the-job accident kind of thing, those are the things that we have to think about. You're actually, these things are creating a better way for people to learn to be safe, or a better way to improve their lives by finding out about the trades or learning how to be an apprentice somewhere and that type of thing. So it's actually, we're creating things that you know, that change people's lives. And to be able to kind of step back and see that, I think, is important.
That's terrific. And do you ever bring in folks whose lives you changed into the organization to present so that people, you know, can put a face with a story?
That's a great idea. No, we actually don't. That would be a great story that I'm going to put it on my list of things to do here.
All right. Invoices in the mail. Don't worry. That won't cost you very much. Well, let me ask just a couple more questions about this, because this is fascinating. I mean, obviously we could talk all day, but I know you're a lot busier than I am, so you've got to get back to work. But so you've clearly developed a specific approach to maximizing your performance that's pretty scalable. What alternative models have you tried?
So the I think I alluded to it a little bit earlier. The alternative model is to, you know, be happy with the pieces that you have. And in some corporate cultures, that's the way that it is. And again, back to the comment of, you know, that's the way we've always done it. That's the way we're going to do it. That's not the way to be. And so that's one of the models that I used to use, is I can fix what's already here. Without changing significant things, I think is a model that has not worked for me. Got this team of people, don't really have an option. We kind of got to make it work. And these are the tools that you have, just because of, you know, either the organization wasn't agile enough to be able to maneuver and be, you know, and make those changes. But kind of that dealing with what you get approach is one that I've used in the past that did not work.
Wow.
We can't ignore issues that need to be addressed. They need to be hit head on. So by dancing around things, it actually hurts the organization. So really hitting things head on and being able to identify those things, and, you know, giving people a chance where they need to be, and really evaluating where people fit. Is there another fit for somebody somewhere else? How can I help this person get to the next level? And what the real issues are, I think it's where we've gotten.
And that, you know, and this is interesting, because this is a great lesson for a lot of the listeners out there who are operators, even in a company they've been in for a while, is to think of themselves as a new, fresh perspective, and that it's really not time probably just to think about improving things. You really have to reimagine them. Yep, and that's absolutely what you've been very articulate about. But I'm wondering if we could challenge some of those operators out there. And I know you know a lot of operators throughout corporate America. It's harder, right? Because inertia is a very strong force. So it's easier just to kind of do the incremental stuff. But what you're arguing for is something that could be embraced by somebody even who's been there for 10, 15 years, is, look, we got to reimagine what tomorrow's going to look like for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been lucky enough to come into a place that allowed me to have a blank canvas of what that needed to be. And having leaders here, having a CEO and a president that embraced that, saying, you know, this is your oyster, and we need to succeed together, and whatever you need to do to make that happen, do that. It becomes difficult when you're in a larger organization where things are set, or quote unquote set in stone, and processes and procedures are already there, and it can be perceived as unbreakable. Mm-hmm. I would challenge people who are having, you know, struggles in operations, you know, try to break it, try harder to break it. I think that was one of the things that I might not have done as well in the past, is trying harder to break what was causing issues rather than just trying to limp around with it.
Wow. I love that. I love that expression. Try harder to break it. That's great. Cause you're right. We work with a lot of clients where, especially new faces in old companies, kind of push up against it and then back off. But you're mm-hmm. right. Maybe you just got to blow through it and say, look, I'm going to be an agent for change. That's why you brought me in. So strap in, because here we go. Good yeah. for you. So speaking of you and some of those other clients we've got, as well as the Under Armour leadership, right, that you alluded to, what do you think very successful leaders are doing to get good guidance that others are not?
I think, you know, listening is number one. Good leaders need to listen to what people are telling them. And the second part of that is being able to filter that list. You know, people, you know, everybody wants to complain, whether it's a leader, whether it's a contributor, whether it's, you know, any, everybody likes to complain because it helps them get things done and things like that. As a leader, listening to what people say, but then filtering it and really pulling out what the problem is. Is there a problem? Is the problem that this person is bringing to me really the problem, or is there a root cause of that that needs to be changed that would fix that and a number of other problems? Mm. So I think by listening and not just listening to what people say, but really listening and filtering and finding the root cause of what the challenges are, I think it's probably number one.
Wow. And, you know, it's funny because you're just mentioning this now, but I know when we broke down your survey results, you actually did that on the phone with me where you said, well, yeah, it really just comes down to X, because if we take care of X, all these other components will fall into place. And I didn't see it. And I was like, oh my gosh, Lawrence, you're right. So that's a great skill to be able to cultivate, which is what is the root cause of so many things that we can wipe out with one move?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, thank you. Let me ask you another personal question. Whom do you know personally who has been successful at guiding their organizations to smash plateaus?
Well, that's good. So I mentioned the Under Armour guys before, my friends over there who were there from the beginning. And again, that's you know, being able to enter a space, you know, where there are the Nikes and the Adidas and everybody else was in that space, to be able to go into somewhere fearlessly with something and with a vision to be able to get somewhere in somewhere that was seemingly crowded. I think that was, you know, that's probably the highest on my list.
Great. And I got a lot of affection for Under Armour as well. So you're making me misty. This is good. I like this. Well, what can we look forward to in the near future from you and Mosaic Learning?
Yeah. So, you know, what we're going to do, we're going to grow like crazy, but we're going to grow in a smart way. Not easy seats, but we're going to grow our organization, move into different verticals. I mentioned healthcare, higher ed, you know, more Fortune 500 companies. You know, our VR and AR has gone from kind of a hobby last year for us, where it was, you know, strictly R&D, to actually being in very, very high demand right now. Mm-hmm. And the quality of that VR and AR on our end is very high and very effective for learning. So we want to cultivate a lot of that just to be thought leaders in that arena. And just keep going, and Mosaic the best place it can be, and make sure it's a great place to work.
Terrific, Lawrence. Please tell listeners how they can learn more about you and Mosaic Learning.
Sure. You can go to www.mosaiclearning.com, or you can just email me at Lawrence, actually it's lbaird@mosaiclearning.
Terrific. Lawrence, thank you for taking the time to join us on Smashing the Plateau.
Thanks, Spencer. Appreciate it.
My guest today has been Lawrence Baird, Vice President of Operations at Mosaic Learning. Thank you again, Lawrence, for joining us.
Thank you, Spencer Deering, for interviewing Lawrence Baird on this special episode of Smashing the Plateau. We've now heard how it is possible to cultivate a best workplace filled with meaningful work that drives maximum value. Would you like to create a working environment with a level of employee engagement like that achieved by today's guest, Lawrence Baird at Mosaic Learning? We have a special gift for listeners of Smashing the Plateau. For a limited time, Best Work Inc. is offering a complimentary copy of its 2016-2017 Millennial Leadership Development Survey. and an initial assessment of your current level of leadership engagement at no cost to you. This consultation, a $500 value, will be with a principal of Best Work, Inc. and focused on your present practices of enhancing and measuring leadership engagement and how to improve them. To access this free gift, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestworkplace. Again, that's smashingtheplateau.com/bestworkplace. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me at smashingtheplateau.com. We want you to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life.